Well, agreed. Good morning, everyone. Namaste. Once again, there was a mass shooting. Virginia Beach. Let's just observe a minute's silence for all of those who are suffering because of that terrible incident. Thy sweet will be done. So, as always, we have some announcements. A Memorial Day retreat was held last Monday, May 27. Swami Sarvadevananda Ji asked us to join in an annual tradition of reading from Swami Vivekananda's complete works on Memorial Day. Readings selected by the Swami were provided to about a dozen participants. We started at around 10:30 a.m. and finished a little before 12:30. After the readings, there was a short worship, followed by a potluck lunch. It was a very enjoyable occasion. This is something that has been going on in Hollywood for many, many years, and the Swami is now spreading it to the other centers for which he's responsible. So please join us next year. Please, on Memorial Day, you can think that, of course it'll be announced, but you can think in your mind next Memorial Day, if you're in town, it will be a nice way to spend some time to come and join us in reading from Swami Vivekananda's complete works. It creates quite an atmosphere. It creates quite an atmosphere in the channel. If you want an explanation of why that happens, you can read Swami Vivekananda's talk, The Powers of the Mind. It's in volume 4. Looking to the future, on Sunday, June 23rd, starting promptly at 11 a.m., we will hold the annual meeting of the congregation. Now, it's a bit of a special year, and that is the 20th anniversary of our being in this facility. The center moved into this facility in 1999. So 2019, 20 years later. So it's our 20th anniversary. We won't make a big deal of it, but there'll be a cake and so on. There will be reports at the annual meeting. There will be reports from your chairman and the treasurer, and from the resident minister. This will be followed by election of board members. We will then retire to the monastery for a catered lunch, and RSVP is required for this lunch so that we don't buy too much food. We've done that in the past, and we want to avoid it. Since we've been asking for RSVPs, it's been much more aligned, the number of people and the amount of food. So you'll find the ability to RSVP both on the website and on the newsletter, in the newsletter. If you haven't already signed up for the newsletter, I encourage you to please do so. You can do that on the website. And as always, we always do, we will have a July 4th celebration, Thursday, July 4th at noon. There will be a short talk about Swami Vivekananda and the fact that he departed this this world, this universe. Well, probably not the universe, just this particular bodily realm, on July 4th, quite deliberately. So there'll be a short talk on Swami Vivekananda, plus songs and readings by the congregation, which is always a highlight, those things that people select to read. No more than 4 or 5 minutes from each person. This will be followed by a potluck lunch on the sun porch and outdoors, or in the fellowship hall if the weather doesn't permit us to meet outside. Please do mark your calendar for a weekend retreat on the 20th and 21st of July. Swami Chandrasekhar Nandaji, head of the Portland, Oregon Vedanta Society, will visit with us on that Saturday and Sunday and offer his wisdom on karma yoga. Those of you who've been coming regularly have heard this announcement, but I want to repeat it so that it really gets into our consciousness, so to speak. The bookshop, cash for books, will be accepted for purchases only on Sunday and on Sundays and on Tuesday and Wednesday evenings when there are classes. At other times, if you wish to buy a book, please bring a check and just leave the check in the little gold box. But you'll find that there will be no cash in that box. A final announcement, as I've been saying for a few weekends now, a few Sundays now, our center will be closed in August. No activities except evening arati. This will be our routine each summer now. And we'll have, at least the plan is, to have Aditya Chaturvedi living at the center with me. So if I go away, Aditya or some other devotee can do the evening arati. So closed in August. And did I forget anything that should be announced? Yes, dear.
Shankara, do you happen to know about Swami having been in the hospital and that he's returned to the hospital? I just got a text from Jerry. He's back in the hospital and...
You're talking about Swami Yogeshananda?
Yogeshananda.
I have not heard anything.
Yeah, and he might be really ready to leave us.
I suspect this is the case. This is what he's been saying for some time now, that he's ready to go. His body is, you know, just about used up. So we can hold a very sweet thought for him that if in fact this is the transition, that it be a transition in full consciousness and that he be embraced by Thakur Mahaswamiji and Raja Maharaj. I know from my own personal experience that the divine ones are never far from us when we are in the hospital. So, thank you, Lori, for bringing that up. Swami Yogeshananda, you know, this center is an embodiment of the great efforts that he put in. He came here several times. In the 70s, late 70s and 80s, finally established the center in Decatur in 1991, and then moved here in 1999. The what we feel here is the momentum from his work. Jai Swami Yogeshananda. This chant that I'm about to offer is also his work. It's a translation of an ancient prayer, and it reminds us of our purpose here this morning and of our relationship to the divine being. Om Sahana Vavatu Sahano Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. May the divine being look over us lovingly as a mother and father. May the divine being support and nourish us as a mother and father. May we have the strength and skill to study together the art of spirituality. May no misunderstandings arise amongst us. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. Jai Jai Swamiji. No one offered to sing a song this morning, and I didn't prepare one, so there will be no song this morning. So, with again a very fond welcome for you to that you are here this morning, we'll go ahead with our talk. June is a month for the study of bhakti yoga. A bhakti yogi, bhakta, establishes a devotional relationship with God through study, prayer, ritual, and worship. As a bhakta, you practice giving every action, thought, emotion, perception, and tendency a Godward turn. All your energies and attributes, both positive and negative, are offered to the divine presence. Your prayer is for self-surrender and ultimately union with your beloved. This is the bhakta's frame of reference. Finding a way slowly and slowly through steady prayer, worship, ritual, to surrender the idea that you are anything other than a servant or a child of the divine. It's a very comfortable way to be with the divine presence, particularly as the feeling grows, as we'll talk about during the talk, that the divine presence is in no way separate from you. And finally, there's this sense of absorption or union with your beloved. The topic for today's talk is seven sayings of Swami Prabhavananda. Swami Prabhavananda was my guru, is my guru. The Swami headed the Vedanta Society of Southern California from 1931. Actually, he started it in 1929, but they didn't formalize it until 1931. From 1931 until his Mahasamadhi on July 4th, 1976. Like Swami Vivekananda, Swami Prabhavananda quite deliberately left the body on July 4th, 1976. If any of you want to know about that, you can talk to me privately about it. The Swami had many disciples to whom he gave private instruction. Some of these teachings came to the attention of Edith Tipple, Nalini, a devotee working on the Society's archives project. She was also a long-time disciple of Swami, is a long-time disciple of Swami Prabhavananda. A skilled writer-editor, Nalini selected seven of the Swami's private instructions to publish by themselves on the last page of her book, Realizing God. Those notes will be the subject of this morning's talk. The notes are, so long as we feel we can do it, so long God remains hidden. So long as we feel we can do it, so long God remains hidden. As you proceed further, you will say, I don't understand anything until the darkness goes away and there is the light of Brahman. Third saying, I know it is hard to hear, but as I have repeated many times over the years, there is absolutely no one who is your own but the Lord. Number four, people have a right to their pain and suffering. Don't try to remove it. Sustain and comfort. Next, the secret of meditation is fourfold. First, the chosen ideal is you yourself. No different. Learn to feel that living presence. Instruction two, patience. Instruction three, perseverance. Instruction four, expectation. the sixth of the Swami's sayings. If each one of us would see ourselves as the Atman, the true self, and look at the things of the world objectively, everything would pass by and be all right. If each one of us would see ourselves as the Atman, the true self, and look at the things of the world objectively, everything would pass by and be all right. And the last of the seven sayings, at the moment we become completely free from cravings, and we are overpowered by the desire, the one desire for God, and we are overpowered by the one desire for God, that very moment God becomes revealed to us. So this morning we will explore and discuss these 20 lines of instruction from the perspective of Bhakti Yoga. Here's a little background. The Upanishads tell us again and again that the Infinite Divine Presence, Om, pervades and shines through your entire body, mind, and intellect. That energy, reflected inaccurately by the contents of your waking and subconscious states, that energy, that Om energy, that Infinite Divine Presence, reflected inaccurately by the contents of your waking and subconscious states, becomes your thoughts, feelings, and perceptions. The net effect is to almost totally obscure the source of your being and its power. A false sense of separate identity is created. This unripe ego prompts us to believe we are living and acting independently. This is the concealing power of tamas and rajas. This is the concealing power of tamas and the projecting power of rajas. Together, these two gunas, their powers, are called avidyamaya, not wisdom, the maya that leads us away from wisdom. We're here this morning to invoke the revealing power of sattva, vidyamaya, that aspect of duality, sattva, that guna, that is the revealing power of sattva is vidyamaya, that which will lead us to higher and higher knowledge. So with that as a perspective, let's look at these seven sayings. First saying, so long as we feel we can do it, so long God remains hidden. This is from the opening of the Kena Upanishad. The student asks, at whose wish does the mind, sent forth, proceed on its errand? At whose command does the first breath go forth? At whose wish do we utter this speech? What God directs the eye or the ear? The teacher replies, Brahman is the ear of the ear, the mind of the mind, the speech of speech, the breath of breath, and the eye of the eye. So long as we feel we are doing it, so long all that remains hidden. And this from chapter 3 of Bhagavad Gita. Now those of you who study the Bhagavad Gita know that chapters 2 and 3 need to be read again and again, because here Krishna establishes the whole basis on which the rest of the Gita is constructed. And he says to Arjuna in chapter 3, every action is really performed by the gunas. Man, deluded by his egoism, thinks I am the doer. But he who has true insight into the operation of the gunas and their various functions knows that when senses attach themselves to objects, gunas are merely attaching themselves to gunas. Knowing this, the aspirant does not become attached to his actions. And then Krishna says, a bit later on in chapter 3, who is the doer? I am, speaking, Krishna speaking, I am the birthless, the deathless, Lord of all that breathes. I seem to be born, this is only seeming, only my Maya. I am the master of my prakriti, the power that makes me, and I'll interpolate all of jagat, all of everything we experience and can experience, all of universe. I am the master of my prakriti. Other places he says that, of course, prakriti, its power is expressed as the three gunas, and he is master of the gunas. So as long as we feel we can do it, so long God remains hidden. The wonder is that the divine presence will never force itself on us. Though it is there always, omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent, it is there fully, without reservation, without qualification. It will never force itself on our attention. We may have an insight, an epiphany. We may stumble over the truth at some point. The challenge is to not get up and walk on as if nothing had happened. To take that as a signal. So as long as we feel we can do it, as long as we think we can do it, or are doing it, so long God remains hidden. As you proceed further, second statement, as you proceed further, and that is along the path of self-discovery and self-actualization that you are on as you take this role of spiritual aspirant, as you proceed further, you will say, I don't understand anything. Until the darkness goes away, and there is the light of Brahman. This feeling of I don't understand anything is the final result of viveka, discrimination, and vairagya, release of those things that you have identified as not worthy of your attention through discrimination. So this feeling of I don't understand anything is the final result of those two absolutely critically important activities of the spiritual aspirant, discrimination and release. You have let go of all your lesser truths, your operating descriptions of yourself and of the world and how it functions, and you have this feeling, I don't understand anything. However, underlying that, arising from your spiritual practice, more and more you believe the scriptures and your teachers and begin to depend entirely on the divine. Now, as we live our lives, of course, we're not living in the realm of Nirvikalpa Samadhi. We're living in the realm of Saguna Brahman, Brahman with attributes. So when you depend entirely on the divine, you're depending on Saguna Brahman, Brahman as Ishvara Ishwari, and their incarnations. This is the way of the bhakta. To become a servant or child, the servant depends entirely on the master for everything that is provided, for everything that is necessary. The child has no responsibilities, the servant may have some responsibilities to perform, but the child has there's no responsibility. If you are really able to be in that childlike relationship with the divine, as Sri Ramakrishna was with Kali, then there's nothing. You're depending entirely on the divine. That is when that dependence is entire, when you are no longer thinking of yourself as anything but this servant or child or one of the other attitudes of cherishing the divine, then it's said, as this, then the Swami says, the darkness goes away and there is the light of Brahman. Now this inevitably brings up, for those of us who live with other people, this inevitably brings up, how about the other people in my life and my duties and my work? Here's what Swami Prabhavananda says about how to maintain peace of mind. I know it's hard to hear, but as I have repeated many times over the years, there is absolutely no one who is your own but the Lord. So the other people in your lives, your work, the people in... what did Krishna just tell us? This is nothing more than Him, nothing more than the Divine Presence, as Prakriti, as the Gunas. So that's how you think about it. You think about, this is the Lord. The other people are the Lord. I offer my work as a gift from the Lord. The work is the gift from the Lord. I do the work and offer it back. As Sri Ramakrishna said, you be like the maidservant in a rich man's house. She speaks and acts as if everything in the rich man's house is also hers. This is my Hari, the child. Oh, see our beautiful gardens. But she knows in her heart that her home and her place is in her home village. This is just where she's working. So, I know it's hard to hear, but as I have repeated many times over the years, there is absolutely no one who is your own but the Lord. So, as Swami Prabhavananda said, give everything a Godward turn. Turn everything into the Lord. Divinize everything. Recognize this and take a stand for it. Offer everything and everyone to her, if the goddess is your Ishta Devata, or to him. Now then, this brings up the question inevitably in our minds. If we're thoughtful about these things, won't this make me indifferent to what happens to my loved ones, my friends and others? The Swami says, people have a right to their pain and suffering. Don't try to remove it. Sustain and comfort. People have a right to their pain and suffering. Why? Because it's the way we learn. We learn little through the periods of happiness in our lives. Because why? In the periods of happiness, the mind is quiet. We're not disturbed. We're not... We don't really recognize the fact that we're in a state, even very temporarily, of sattva. So it's only through pain and suffering that we learn. And I think we all know people who, though the law says not to, though logic says not to, they have persisted in talking on their cell phones and texting on their cell phones when they're in a car, and finally they get into an accident. And it's their fault, because their attention is totally distracted. Now, this is a very mundane example of how they might, at that point, learn, oh, I'd better not talk on my cell phone or text while I'm driving, because it distracts me too much and I get into an accident. This is their pain and suffering. Now, you can generalize that out from your own experience into your own life, the pain and suffering that you see other people experiencing. It is the result of their karma. It is the result of their being inaccurate. They're missing the mark in how they behave, how they think, what they believe. So the Swami says, do not try to remove it. Sustain and comfort. So you don't become indifferent. You simply realize, you simply recognize that the suffering that other people are experiencing is as a result of their karma and represents what they need to learn in order to move on. So sustain and comfort. And it can be very difficult with some people whose minds are very unsettled and their life is very erratic. It's very difficult even to try and sustain and comfort them. But nevertheless, that is from the Swami's perspective, and the way we can divinize this is to see them as the divine person, though they may not know or recognize it in the least. They are also the divine. And so you offer what you can to sustain and comfort them in their suffering. For guidance in this, of course, for guidance in the moment when you are on the spot to sustain and comfort someone, practice meditation regularly. What does meditation do? The practice of meditation, it calms the mind. When your mind is calm, you see more clearly. You make better decisions. You see what's necessary. This is what Sri Krishna talks about in the Gita as becoming more efficient. Becoming more efficient. So for guidance in all of life, but particularly in these difficult matters, for guidance, practice meditation regularly. Every morning at least. And here are the Swami's instructions for the practice of meditation. It really helps to keep this in mind, particularly if you're practicing as a bhakta. It helps to keep in mind what the Swami said. The secret of meditation is fourfold. First, the chosen ideal is you yourself, no different. Learn to feel that living presence. So whether you practice here or here, in the living presence here, you'll actually see some vision. If you practice long and diligently, you'll see some vision of the divine being. If you practice here, perhaps it will be only light, more light. But nevertheless, what will happen is something will reveal itself to you as the divine presence. This is what's meant by self-discovery, capital S self. You discover the self within. So the first instruction for meditation, the chosen ideal is you yourself, no different. Learn to feel that living presence. Second instruction, patience. Isn't it true that we get impatient with ourselves? We sit for meditation. It's another day when there's just nothing but dryness. And just though we've done everything with the practice correctly, it seems as if nothing has gone well. It's just mud mind or distracto mind, whatever it is. If we become impatient with ourselves, we just further agitate the mind. So we must be patient. We must just continue to practice. We must, and this is the third instruction, we must persevere. We must not be daunted, we must not be discouraged, and we must not be impatient with ourselves or with the practice. How many times did Edison fail before he created a functioning light bulb? As something from the Star Wars, where Yoda says, the difference between the master and the beginner is the master has failed more times than the beginner has ever tried. So don't be discouraged or daunted by what seems to you failure. The Swamis and the yogis standing behind them will tell you something is being accomplished even though you can't see it. And so the fourth instruction is live in that sweet expectation. The fourth instruction is expectation. Live in that sweet expectation that this morning when you sit, something marvelous will happen. It may not. All of what was just said before. But that sweet expectation is there, and some morning, something marvelous will happen. What is the living presence? Just to define it for us. Living presence is Brahman, is Atman. It is the Tvam in Tattvamasi, that thou art. And when it is discovered, when it is, and just think about the word, discovered, uncovered, discovered. When it is uncovered for the first time, everything changes. So persist until that discovery takes place. Because once you have experienced it, even for a moment, nothing is the same. Then, having had that discovery, the Swami says, this is his sixth instruction, if each one of us would see ourselves as that Atman, the true self, and look at the things of the world objectively, everything would pass by and be all right. We would live in a state of santosha, of contentment. Now there's a wonderful pun in this statement. Look at the things of the world objectively. The things of the world is everything we can think of, feel, perceive, experience in any way. They are all objects. They are all objects of that sense, that perception, that feeling. There's only the subject, the Atman, the witness. So if each one of us would see ourselves as the Atman, the true self, and look at the things of the world objectively, everything would pass by and be all right. Now, what will interrupt this state of being all right? We're very deep. We're very deep. We're old, old beings. And it's said that the last of the vasanas are those of subtle desire. Very subtle desire. Still this sense of, I'm going to do it. For example, one is to be powerful so that you can do good. I want to be a powerful person so I can do good. We can see how this goes wrong. This Swami Vivekananda points this out in one of his lectures on Jnana Yoga, how those who try to do good in the world have had this noble aspiration, But because it is, there is this subtle desire behind it, it goes wrong. He says it's very difficult to do good in the world. Very difficult to do good. So you, all these subtle desires, they're the last thing that will shimmer in front of you as you're gazing on this Atman, this sense of this divine being within. What do we do when these things arise? We're trying to look at them objectively, see them as objects. So, what do we do with everything? Give all such desires back to God. Replace those desires. Don't try to push them away. Don't try to deny them. Simply offer them to God and replace them. This is what Patanjali says to do in the sutras. Don't try to push away untruth. Replace it with the higher truth. Replace those desires with an unbending yearning for yearning with your beloved. This is the Bhakta's way. The beloved will do any good that's to be done. So you offer the desire. There's this desire to do good, Lord. Let it be done. Thy will be done. So you have the unbending yearning for union with your beloved. This is the Bhakta's way. And so the last of these seven comments, we just talked about the subtle cravings that can arise even at the last. The last of the statements is, at the moment we become completely free from cravings and we are overpowered by the one desire for God, that very moment God becomes revealed to us. This is what Christ was speaking of when he said, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. When you're free of cravings, and you're, or the only thing that remains is this overpowering yearning to be with the beloved, one desire for God, that very moment God becomes revealed to us. Each one of us, Swami Vivekananda says, tells us, without qualification, without reservation, each one of us is on the path to this glorious revelation of our true original nature. And so let us celebrate that and celebrate one another. That's who's here this morning. All of these people who are on the path, on this spectrum of self-actualization. For those of you who haven't read the book Divine Grace by Swami Ranganathananda, I highly recommend it. It describes this journey with great compassion and great understanding and great accuracy. So here we sit this morning on our journeys, having been seated for some time in a place that is an embodiment of sattva. So what has all this given rise to in you? Let's talk among ourselves. This is the best part, where we let one another know that this Sangha is real, that we are working, that we are working together. So what comment or question do you have that that might help other people understand where you're coming from and help them understand more about where they are? Yes, dear.
So you said that the desire that you have for objects, the way to do it is to replace it. How do you replace that with something, you know, the desire to maybe seek God instead?
Well, everything that appears in our mind, in our intellect, is a product of duality. In duality, there is that which leads downward, that which just keeps us on a level plane, and that which leads upward. So every desire other than the desire for divine inspiration and divine knowledge is one of those that will lead us either slightly downward, deeply downward, or at best keep us on a level plane. So we don't try to push away those desires. We don't try to push away all of that. We say, this is all yours, Lord. This entire jagat and everything within it. Krishna just told us that in chapter 3. Everything within it is his and his creation or her creation, if that's how you see it. So we offer all that to the Lord and say, give me pure love for thee. Give me pure. What is pure love? Without anything other than just the desire for the love itself. Nothing behind it. Is there something wrong with petitionary prayer? No, no, no. There's nothing wrong with asking Mother for whatever it is that we want or need. She'll do as she sees fit, as best for us. But if we want the highest, just ask for that. Fill our hearts full of love for thee. As it says in this, in the evening prayer breaker of this world's chain, thou hast finished with fear and with doubt, standing firm in the vision of God, refuge to all who have cast fame, fortune, and friends away. Without question thou shelterest us. And the world's great sea in its wrath seems shrunk to the puddle that fills a hoofprint in the clay. Everything is in its place when we put the divine first. Grant me, O Lord, a pure and steadfast love for thee. This is the Bhakta's way. That's what we're talking about in June. If we were answering from a Jnani's perspective, it would be a different answer. But we'll leave that to the month in which we just... It's a practice, and it's something that you do day after day after day. You sit in front of whatever it is that inspires your love of the divine, be it a picture, an image, a murti of some kind, or simply a lingam, that represents the formless aspect of the divine, and pour out your heart, offering everything that's in your heart, everything that's in your mind to the divine, and then say, replace all of this, Lord. Replace it with this pure and steadfast love for thee. We see in the lives of the saints that it does and therefore can happen. And Swami Vivekananda insists that it is the destiny of every one of us. So it's a practice, day after day. Anyone else? Yes, please.
Just to add to what you already said, I was listening to a talk yesterday, and one of the things that was brought up was Mahendra Gupta M, who wrote the mm-hmm. Gospel.
Mm-hmm.
At his second meeting as Sri Ramakrishna, how do you fix your mind on God? And Sri Ramakrishna tells him three things. He says, one is chant the name of the Lord and sing the glories of God.
Mm-hmm.
Number two is practice meditation mm-hmm. in your mind and in a quiet place, whether mm-hmm. it is a shrine or corner mm-hmm. of your house. And then number three is constantly practice discrimination, viveka, between the real and unreal, and anything that's unreal, towards that practice, vairagya renunciation.
Mm-hmm. Release it, yes. Perfect, perfect. Thanks for bringing that up. I hope all you heard that. And those of you who have a copy of the Gospel, if you want to see the exact words that she's referring to, just turn to those pages of the of M's second meeting with the Master. You know. Yes, Robert.
Maybe it's just me, but I'm missing a lot of what's going on here. Noise, the air is making.
I'm sorry, Robert. Yeah, we need to get that yeah. looked at. You're
it's,
right.
It's been something that it's been going for a long time. I figured I'd say it so if it's bothered anybody else.
What?
The noise of this air.
The air conditioning, yes. We do need to get it looked
it's
at.
It's like a relief when it goes off.
Yes, it is a relief when it goes off. And the person who has to deal with his recordings, they have to filter out that to make the recordings more audible.
It makes me cough so much.
So my promise to you, Robert, is that within the next week I will have some air conditioning people in here to see if we can't moderate the sound of that. We need the air conditioning, but how do we reduce the noise? Thanks for bringing it up. I'm glad you gave me a poke about it. I've been noticing it and thinking about it and just not acting. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, in the back.
If I have heard this right, the air conditioning does not everything is like accurately, but did I hear you say that we are not to alleviate the suffering of others, just sustain and comfort? Is that what you said?
He said people have a right to their pain and suffering.
Yes.
Do not try to remove it.
But don't we see that in the Christian way, they always have been to try to remove everybody's suffering? So is that not the right path?
We're talking about what Swami Prabhavananda said, mm-hmm. and we're looking at it from a bhakta's perspective. The removal of someone's pain and suffering means that you take away the lesson that they're trying, that their karma is trying to teach them. This is what the Swami, sustain and comfort. This is really what Christ said. If you read the Sermon on the Mount, Christ talks about, and he talks about it in a number of ways, serving your fellow human beings, but not to try to take away their suffering, but to sustain and comfort them in their suffering. Now, Christ himself could perform the miracle of removing someone's blindness. We are not Christ, not yet. We don't have the discernment of whose sight should be removed, blindness should be removed, and whose lameness should be cured. So we sustain the blind person. We comfort them. It's a fine line to walk. This is why I said to get the clear indication of what is appropriate for you to do. Practice meditation and go within and see what it is that is appropriate for you to do. It's a difficult decision, but this is a tough teaching by the Swami. People have a right to their pain and suffering because it is the only way that they will learn. Dr. Mutch?
You know, pain is involuntary, suffering is voluntary. That means when pain is inflicted on you, you have no choice but to give attention to that. But the suffering which comes as a consequence of pain is a matter of choice. And that's the reason why we try to detach one from the other. For example, if you've got a pain in the ear, in that case it becomes compelling. You have to listen to that one. How many people say that I do not have pain in my ear? Nobody. When the shoulder hurts, my right shoulder hurts, he never says, my left shoulder does not hurt. This is a way of training our mind to look upon body as a vehicle and not as a master of what we are. And practically, you know, what you say is basically along the same principle which we say over and over again, but then an oft-repeated lie appears to be truth.
Mm-hmm.
But an oft-repeated truth becomes a higher truth. So that corollary, I think our Vedanta asks us to follow that corollary. I had one secretary, she was from Netherlands, and one time she told me that my sister was feeding the baby, the breastfeeding. And that time, she told my mother, I put something in the oven, will you please take it out? So mother says, I'll be very happy to, but my darling, do what you are doing. Right now, if you are feeding the baby, don't think about the oven and what is in the oven. And I think that is the kind of distraction we are talking about. Distraction is not only for the drivers who, by using a digital device, are distracted. They are distracted all the time.
Oh, yes.
While driving, if somebody honks, we are distracted. If somebody passes, we are distracted. If someone overtakes, we are distracted. But the whole idea is to minimize the distraction by singular focus attention on what you are doing and nothing else, which I think we can train our body and mind to do that. Because the relationship between the body and the mind is like to the cutting edge of the razor and the handle of the razor. If you put your hand on the cutting edge of the razor, you bleed, of course. But you are meant to put it on the handle so that you can use the razor to the purpose that you want to do that. So the body is like a handle. It doesn't cut anything. And that would handle it like that one. I was thinking about Swami, why today? Then all along, when I was thinking the movie E.T., if any one of you remembers the movie E.T., after being, E.T. is extraterrestrial. She has come from the other. And the children...
Extraterrestrial.
Yeah, that's what they are eating. And the children, they do not recognize it is extraterrestrial. So they identify.
But oh, E.T. I thought you said eating. I'm sorry, E.T.
E.T.
Yes.
So finally, E.T. gets sick. And they try to do everything for E.T., but nothing works because E.T. wants to go home.
Yes.
And this is not his home.
Yes.
He was very happy here. He was very much cared for, very much loved for. But this is not his home.
Yes.
So I feel the same thing about Swami. Why?
Yes.
He's in E.T. That Atma has come from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So now if he wants to go home, What's wrong with that one?
Oh no, let's let him go home.
Let him go home.
Yes. And I'm sure he's been phoning home regularly, saying, come and get me. You know, come and get me. I'm sure he has. The Lord is on that main line.
Yes.
His line is never busy. Tell him what you want. Yes, Robert.
Well, the pain and suffering is, you know, we learn most profoundly from pain and suffering. We don't learn from pleasure.
No, not much.
And on the other hand, the pain and suffering is a symptom. The symptom lets us know that something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So now we can do something about it ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
If we come to other people's aid, then we deny them the opportunity to discover.
Yes.
So, if they don't discover, then they can't seek the solution.
No. No. They have to find, each of us has to learn for ourselves. That doesn't mean we should be abandoned to sink into total misery. So sustain and comfort. But if someone resolutely will not earn their own living, even though they could, and they keep borrowing money and not paying it back. We all know people like this. It's not a good idea to keep loaning them money. Yes, Uma.
I have to comment on the word expectation.
Please.
Expectation. According to Bhagavad Gita, do your karma daily, regularly, but do not expect results of your karma. In the sense that you work for the work's sake with all your heart, dedicating the results to God, not expecting return or reward of your work. Now, in this sense, I think that you are using Swami Prabhupada is using the word expectation, perhaps has a slightly different connotation. I think the way he means is faith, have shraddha, that whatever you are doing will eventually be good for you. It will take you where you want to go. And that is what I think, because I was struggling with the word expectation. Instead of expectation, I think I'm sure he means have faith.
No. Uma, let me just cut it right there. He does not. He says that spiritual aspirations and spiritual expectations are different than worldly. He means expectation. Expect the Lord to keep his promise.
Yeah, that means you do believe it.
Oh, yes. Yeah, of course, there has to be the shraddha behind it. Yeah. But he didn't choose that word carelessly. He wants you to have that expectation that I will do my part and you will do yours. So it is expectation. It isn't. We can't replace it with faith. Faith is there. But I cannot believe that the Swami was careless in his choice of words.
Yeah,
he meant expectation. It's not the same as Krishna's instruction about karma yoga. Our worldly desires, though there is only one life, our worldly desires are a lower truth, a lesser truth. Swami was very clear that our spiritual desires do not abide by those rules. Our spiritual desires and our spiritual expectations we are to expect that our spiritual work will yield results.
So that's how he differentiates.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I think expectation means whenever you do something, you should have objective or goal. So when you meditate, you have to have that goal in mind somewhere. I guess that's what he means by
this. Yes, I think you're right. But what he means is that the Lord makes great promises. Sri Krishna says, "Turn to me in utter devotion. I see no sinner. Holiness itself shall transform you." Huge promise. Huge promise. We can expect that if we do our part, if we turn to the Lord in utter devotion, this is the Bhakta's way, turn to the Lord in utter devotion. In other words, turn our face from the world and turn it to the Lord, toward the Lord. Until we can see the world as the Lord, we turn it to the Lord as the object of our meditation, our worship, our ritual, our study, in the expectation that Krishna will keep his promise. And Jesus makes the same promise when he says, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all else shall be added unto you." Notice there's no qualification. All else except. All else shall be added unto you. Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all else shall be added unto you. So, yes, we need to have that goal in mind of utter devotion to the Lord, if we're practicing as a bhakta. Utter devotion. Complete. Yes?
Again, I'm reminded of what the Swami from Rhode Island had said when he came, and I was sitting at lunch with him, and the question was, when you, in the spiritual practice, when you expect or desire, is it wrong? And he said, no, because when you are expecting or desiring something in your spiritual, you're not depriving anybody else.
No.
Whereas in the worldly, if you want something, somehow you're depriving somebody else. So there's nothing wrong in expecting or desiring in your spiritual aspirations.
Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, what will happen if your spiritual aspirations are fulfilled, you will become a benefit to the world. As it says in the Chandi, those who take refuge in the Mother become themselves a refuge to the world. Yes, Dr.
If we elaborate the word expectation to include consequence, then as a yogi, after doing anything, you are allowed to watch the consequence of what you did.
Yes.
Which could be either positive or negative. And that's the way you learn. So that if you have detached yourself and done something, for example, 1 hour of meditation, expectation is not that I'll be happy. But if the observation is that yes, after 1 hour of meditation, I became much better, which is a consequence of meditation, in which case it's a feedback. So the feedback also is extremely important, and expectation is not a feedback. Expectation is your emotions admixed with the feedback.
One of the things that, you're absolutely right, Dr. Munch, in this case, this is absolutely right. But one of the things that is true about the practice of spiritual discipline is that it is easy to become discouraged or daunted. Because there will be periods of dryness. There will be periods of where there is very little feedback. There is, but it's too subtle for us to see. This is what the yogis tell us. It's too subtle for us to know. So this is what Swami is pointing to when he says expectation. Just because you've been patient and persevered and nothing seems to be happening, the next time you sit, you have the expectation that perhaps this time. As the Swami said, those of you who persist are just a hair's breadth away. We have no idea how long it will take to traverse that hair's breadth, but it's not far. It's not far.
My experience with expectation is that it does not work. It does not work because our timing is different. If I expect something and my timing is immediate, I got a problem with it. Because maybe the expectation is going to fulfill itself, but not in my time. Or not in anyone else's time. And it causes upset. When you expect something and it doesn't happen, the result is upset, disbelief, all kinds of things. And I find it better to not have expectations, just have belief. Just believe in something. And if it happens, it's supposed to happen. If it doesn't happen, not supposed to happen.
Okay. So, Robert, I will let you sit in quiet meditation and argue that one out with Swami Prabhupada. Because he said and meant expectation. And expectation is also a challenge for us. When we expect and it doesn't happen, that is also a challenge. And this is this. So then we return to square one. I am the divine presence. The living presence is here. That manifestation of that self-actualization doesn't take place in one day or one week or one month. So we return to instruction two, patience, and instruction three, perseverance, with the expectation that at some point I will lose all cravings and have only the desire for God. And then everything will be fulfilled. It took Tota Puri, Sri Ramakrishna's teacher of Advaita, of non-dual spiritual practice. It took him, starting as a boy in a monastery, by his own testimony, it took him 40 years of continuous practice. So we may think that's a long time, but in terms of our presence in universe, if we believe what we're told in the scriptures and by the yogis, we're very old. In 40 years is nothing.
Sometimes there is a difference in the same word. The denotations and connotations of the same word. And connotations include what is the dictionary meaning. And in Sanskrit, the word shraddha, I put my faith in something that includes, I believe, it also includes, I hope, I expect. So it's a matter of choice.
Well, you're absolutely right, Uma. You're absolutely right. The word expectation it opens out and out and out the more you think about it. So you're absolutely right. But in terms of exactly what the Swami meant, I'll say the same thing to you I said to Robert. Sit quietly and argue it out with Swami P. Don't think he won't come to you if you do that resolutely. Don't think that you won't feel a presence and an increased understanding of what was meant. That is there. These great souls, they don't go anywhere. As Sri Ramakrishna said, I'm only just behind the curtain. I'm only in the next room.
In a way, I was thinking that the scientific approach is more precise, because when you do something, it divides into short-term results and long-term results.
Mm-hmm.
So that if you have pain in the chest and say your heart is enlarged, you need exercise, so you run for 5 miles and come back, how is it my heart? You say, no, you have to do it on a sustained basis.
Exactly.
So keep running like this, and after 5 years, if you come, then I can say your heart has improved.
Yes. Exactly.
And Siddhanta would say, live like this for the whole life, and by the time of your death, you'll realize.
That's, again, a very, very important instruction in the Gita, isn't it? Live like this, and then when it comes time to leave this body, you'll leave it properly. You'll leave it in such a way as to, you'll go where your aspirations, your spiritual aspirations have led you. If you're irresolute, if you practice this week and then forget about it next week, and next month you take it up again, and da-da-da-da. As Swami Chaitananda says, hopeless condition. So we have to really be patient and perseverant, and we have to strive each time we sit to feel that living presence. And it does happen. It does happen. You do feel it. Anything else? Well, this has been wonderful as usual. What a great discussion of some of the points that were brought up here, particularly this discussion about expectation. You know, we all hear these things a bit differently, and we try to integrate them into our own lives a bit differently. And as I say, if you really want to understand what the Swami said, ask him. Sit quietly and ask him. Because these great souls are available to us. So shall we close with the chant? Is it time for that? Okay. Again, this is a translation of an ancient prayer by our beloved Swami Yogeshananda. Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in the sky, on the earth, and in the waters.
Let there be peace in the sky,
on the earth, and in the waters. Let there be peace in the herbs, the plants, and the trees. May the gods be peaceful. May the whole universe be pervaded by peace. Let this infinite universal peace prevail throughout my being. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. Notice the verb, beings. That's who we are. We're verbs. We are the subject, verbing as this object. What a delight. And now for a different kind of delight. I noticed that some of the devotees brought some things for us to share. They're on the table in the monastery. There'll also be coffee and tea, so please go in, enjoy yourselves. Om Namaste.